Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Susan Crawford, who's a professor of law at the Benjamin Cardozo School of Law at Yeshiva University and a regular contributor to Bloomberg View and Wired. She served as special assistant to the president for science, technology, and innovation policy during 2009 and co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administrations. Susan Crawford is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, where she leads the Institute's work on making high-speed internet access a universal, affordable resource for all, and is a member of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's Advisory Council on Technology and Innovation. Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard Law School and a visiting Stanton professor of the First Amendment at Harvard's Kennedy School. And her latest book just out is Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the Gilded Age. Welcome to Background Briefing, Susan Crawford.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I see you don't hedge your bets on the Gilded Age. We're not talking about McKinley here. We're talking about the present, right?
Yes, I'm talking about the new Gilded Age, an era in which Brian Roberts, the CEO of Comcast, makes 1,000 times as much as the average Comcast employee. And it's an age of plutocrats and enormous oligopolies that dominate, particularly in the media industry in the United States.
Well, I'm speaking to you literally from across the street to Universal Studios, which was just gobbled up by the Roberts.
I thought Universal Studios, oh, that's right. They're part of the NBCU megalopolis. You know, it's so large, it's very hard to keep together which pieces go where.
Well, but they promised the FCC more diversity, et cetera, better service. And as soon as they got the go-ahead, they went ahead and bought more companies and consolidated. I mean, that's my understanding.
Yes, NBCU Comcast is an enormous concern, and when it comes to the wires that they sell, they cover 50 million American households, 45% of the American population, so it's really very large.
But there's more at play here than just these new monopolies essentially cornering the market on the information age and giving diminishing service at higher cost to their consumers. This also surely affects America's overall competitiveness. The high-speed internet is one of the greatest tools that could revolutionize medical care and education. The Japanese, the Koreans, the French, everybody is jumping on the bandwagon, and it's proven to be an extraordinary economic resource if it's used for the public good. So what happened here? We invented the internet, for God's sake.
Yes, we invented it, and for the first generation of internet innovation, absolutely the United States led the way. But between the time that we came up with the idea and now, there's been enormous consolidation and deregulation of the on-ramps that give us access to the internet. So to boil down the whole story, for more than 80% of Americans, your only choice for a truly world-class high-speed internet access connection is your local cable monopoly. And the cable companies long ago divided up the country. So, you know, they centralized their activities and pulled together their systems. So if you're in Boston, that's Comcast territory. Time Warner Cable is another enormous cable company, second to Comcast, that controls its own cities. This is a real drag, as you indicate, on our global competitiveness because we pay more per megabit of internet access than almost every other developed country in the world. Only Mexico, Chile, Greece, and New Zealand are more expensive than we are.
And the service is getting worse and worse. I mean, they have the monopoly, they bundle everything, they give you what's often referred to as the poverty of choice, where you can channel surf all day and not find anything. I mean, this is the part of it that's extraordinary, is that we essentially are so far behind the rest of the world, including France, where I believe you get, 10 times the speed for one quarter of the price?
Yeah, somebody living in the city of Paris has multiple choices for very high-speed connections at about $35, $40 a month. That's unthinkable in the United States. Now, the cable actors on their side would say, no, we're improving service because you can have, for the richest Americans, you can pay through the nose 400 megabit per second download services and many, many channels of content. Now, the problem with this service is that it's not symmetrical. Los Angeles is a publishing town, and you'll want the ability to upload bits to actually publish as well as passively receive. And when it comes to uploading capacity, cable is far second place to what the world standard is now, which is fiber optic connections. Now, Verizon began building out fiber optic, including in some parts of L.A., but in March 2010 announced that it wasn't going to be expanding its Fios services. So bottom line, the cable actors Comcast and Time Warner face competition from Verizon in only very small slices of their territory. 15% of Comcast territory overlaps with Verizon, and 11% of Time Warner Cable's territory. So in the rest of their enormous footprints, they face no competition, and it is entirely within their discretion what services they're going to sell and how good they're going to be and whether they're going to allow us to compete as a nation.
So in other words, Verizon made a quantum leap forward in quality for their consumers, and then they decided, because of their monopolistic power, that they didn't need to invest any more money, that they could give substandard service.
Well, Verizon saw the writing on the wall, which is that it's much cheaper to upgrade the cable plant to provide these 100 megabit per second download speeds than it is to rip up copper from the streets, Verizon's copper, and replace that with fiber. And they had another whole business available to them, which was wireless. So Verizon saw higher margins on the wireless side of their business and decided to devote their attention there and to back off entirely from expanding their fiber operations in America. In effect, they ceded the territory to the cable companies. So it's a sort of a you take wires, we'll take wireless arrangement between AT&T and Verizon on the one hand, who are almost entirely focused on wireless, and Time Warner Cable and Comcast on the other, who control the wired marketplace in America.
Again, I'm speaking with Susan Crawford, a professor of law at the Benjamin Cardoza School of Law at Yeshiva University, and a visiting professor at Harvard Law School, and a visiting Stanton professor of the First Amendment at Harvard's Kennedy School. Her latest book is Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the Gilded Age. And your book makes it clear that the railroad barons of today run these cable companies. And as bad as it is that they have monopolistic power, they can almost write their own checks in terms of what they charge, and they don't obviously care about what kind of service they provide. When they are faced with competition, for example, the city of Chattanooga, as a municipality, they have it as a utility, high-speed internet access, and it's extraordinary. I think it's the fastest in the country. But other cities and states that have tried that have been proactively sued by Verizon and other of these big telecom monopolies.
Yes, in 19 states in the United States, the incumbents have managed to erect barriers to cities who want to make this decision for themselves. Now, there's some great exceptions to this right in your own backyard. Santa Monica has built its own municipal fiber network serving right now city buildings and many businesses in Santa Monica at a reasonable rate. And they find that this drives economic development, that people wanting to rent, businesses wanting to come to Santa Monica, ask first about fiber access before almost any other attribute of a business building. And this has really been a bright light for Santa Monica, and I'm hoping that that same model can be replicated in other cities across the country.
Well, apparently the state of Georgia sued, did they not, recently against... Well, Georgia House of Representatives voted down a proposal that would have prevented cities from investing in their own internet access networks. I take it the proposal that they voted down was coming from the telecom monopolies.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were essentially saying that if anybody in a city in Georgia had access to a private provider's speeds of 3 megabits per second or more, that the city could do nothing to build its own network. And that was so apparently protecting the incumbent status quo that city managers and lots of groups in Georgia rose up and said, forget it, we can't possibly let this legislation go through. I see this as a turning point, really. I think it's going to be useful to us in tussles in other state legislatures. The bigger point is that where private monopolies have emerged, often the city has to use its control over its rights of way to just make sure that its citizens are served by reasonably priced, fairly available access, this is just like electricity or water or sewage. It's just like the street grid. It's an input into everything the city wants to accomplish.
And Susan Crawford, you served as a special assistant to the President for Science, Technology, and Innovation Policy during 2009 and co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administrations. And clearly, the FCC has the ability to oversee and be the advocate for the public. And it seems that over the years, there's been a revolving door with a lot of people becoming commissioners and then ending up working for the cable companies. And under Michael Powell, he basically gave away the store. And there are things that, for example, the FCC could do about Citizens United, which is an incredibly corrosive decision that has changed our politics and basically enabled the very oligarchs that you write about in your new book, Captive Audience, the Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the Gilded Age. They could actually force the broadcasters to reveal the source of those who are paying for these political commercials, which are the way that our politics are transacted via television commercials. That's what happens. You know, the candidates, the congressmen, the senators raise money from special interests and then they turn it over to the television monopolies. And that's how they get reelected. So what's happening at the FCC? That's a long-winded question, but that's the bottom line.
Well, I can only take on one problem at once, and Citizens United is obviously at the heart of all of these issues. But what I'm focused on is what we can do to ensure reasonably priced, ubiquitous, very high-speed, globally competitive access for everybody in America. And there, the FCC has been quite effective in at least talking about the necessity for very high-capacity networks in America. Julius Genachowski, the outgoing FCC chairman, made a number of speeches mentioning the importance of gigabit networks. Where they haven't been quite as effective is making the policy changes that would be needed to keep our existing incumbents out of control, I mean, not allow them to block the creation of competitive fiber networks that would serve Americans. And there's certainly much more to be done on this score. We're now waiting for the new FCC chairman to arrive, and the jury's out. We'll see what he accomplishes when he comes in.
Well, you were suggested by a number of people. There was a sort of a spontaneous campaign to put your name forward, wasn't there, for that job?
Yeah, I was very honored by that campaign. I think Tom Wheeler, the one who was chosen by the president, is more than qualified for the position, and I'm delighted to know that there's someone coming in who has such a backbone and is a very smart guy. My role in all this is just to be to make sure that the FCC lets the American public know that there's a problem. We've got a competitive problem for high-speed internet access in America, and that creates two very important digital divides. One is between people who make less money in America and rural people and the very rich people. Socioeconomic status is very highly correlated with high-speed internet access in America. So internally, we're doing is entrenching existing inequality because of our absence of policy in this area. But then as a nation, we are falling behind dramatically, falling behind other countries who take this issue very seriously. South Korea has announced that everybody in the country is going to have gigabit symmetrical fiber access. That's 100 times faster than the average connection in America by 2017. And that's a goal we can't even imagine here.
Well, you have been described, Susan Crawford, as the Elizabeth Warren of the telecom world, and you've been fighting the good fight on the behalf of consumers. I was reading a very ironical piece that you wrote about the Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim Alou, who was up until a few days ago the richest man in the world. The other richest guy, of course, who just eclipsed him was Bill Gates. He controls 80% of the landlines in Mexico and 70% of the wireless market there. But you're arguing that, in a way, it's tougher here because you don't just have the one target. You've got a number of these big, entrenched, powerful, and politically connected oligopolies here in the United States.
Yeah, what's interesting about the situation in America is that these major players don't even have to agree to set prices. They can act in parallel to exclude competition quite easily by their bundling practices, by the barriers to entry that they can raise. And they are in a very comfortable place right now. I mean, one of the great benefits of being a monopolist is a quiet life. And Verizon, AT&T, Time Warner Cable, and Comcast all have quite quiet lives right now. The status quo is terrific for them. But the effect of all this behavior is very similar to what Mexico has experienced under Mr. Slim. Cherry-picking markets, charging rich customers a great deal, often leaving the poor out, and letting the state bear the burden of trying to fill the gap. It's not good for the country as a whole. We're essentially experiencing monopoly power with four monopolists coordinating their activities.
And I take it you're suggesting that this is not necessarily motivated out of malice or evil on the part of the oligopolies. It's just the way it works.
Yes, if you're a private company, this is what you try to do. You try to maximize shareholder value. And AT&T, for example, has paid out more in dividends every year of the last 13 years than it has invested in its network over the last 12 years. So when they're allocating capital, they're going to allocate it to dividends and buybacks, and they're going to keep prices up as high as they can muster them. It is not in their interest to invest in the fiber upgrade that the country needs as a whole. If AT&T had devoted half of those dividends to investing in fiber, 70 million people in America would have fiber to the home. This happens in these basic infrastructure businesses. The absolutely rational incentives of the private companies are not necessarily aligned with the interests of the country as a whole.
So given that situation, then isn't the burden on the government to step in and be the advocate for the people?
Yes, it is the role of government to stand up against the idea that might makes right. And we have a regulatory ideal in this country, and it's very pro-competition, pro-free market, pro-economic growth. It's the idea that creating a level playing field for all Americans makes possible enormous spillover effects in productivity, economic growth, social cohesion, all these things. This is why we care about clean water and public education and all these other quite expensive basic attributes of American life. For some reason, we now treat high-speed internet access like a luxury, just as the country once treated electricity as a luxury. But just like electricity, it's not. It's an input into absolutely everything we want to do, and it should be available at a reasonable price to everybody.
Well, why doesn't the White House or the Democrats or somebody, why don't they champion the idea of letting cities like Chattanooga, like Santa Monica that you mentioned, build out their own high-speed networks?
Well, it would be very disruptive to the plans of these giant companies for the White House or the administration to make a big fuss about this. So I'm not sure why they don't. I decided that my attention is better directed towards assisting cities in doing this for themselves and rolling back the state laws that get in their way and ensuring that they have the best possible information available to them as they make the choice to make sure their citizens are well served.
And the fact that today, Susan Crawford, Yahoo announced that they're buying Tumblr for $1.1 billion at the same time, vowing not to screw it up. It's a very odd business announcement, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was Yahoo's outside privacy lawyer back in 2000 when Yahoo was the cool internet company. And I've been very sad to see Yahoo lose its edge over the last few years. And maybe their new CEO believes that this is the way to add energy and profits to the company. The jury's out. We'll see whether money can actually be made on Tumblr. As a nation, we tend to be very fond of mergers and big deals. They're sort of shiny and interesting. They're like sports events. This one may or may not help Yahoo develop the scale and sort of profit profile that it needs to continue to be successful.
Well, in closing, Susan Crawford, obviously listening to you and reading your book, Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the Gilded Age, one's left with the distinct impression that we need a Teddy Roosevelt. We need a trust buster.
Yes, we do. We need leadership. Only with FDR's involvement in electricity did the entire country get electrical service. When he came into office, 90% of farmers didn't have it. And he took on the special interests and the private trusts and made sure that it was available at a reasonable cost. Now we've got that same battle, but it's over fiber high-speed internet access, and it will take leadership at the highest levels to ensure that the country as a whole gets it. Now, until that happens, cities can do a lot to change the equation and get people excited about the possibilities of fiber access, and we're already seeing that happen across the country.
Well, Susan Crawford, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Susan Crawford, who's a professor of law at the Benjamin Cardoza School of Law at Yeshiva University and a regular contributor to Bloomberg View and Wired. She served as special assistant to the president for science, technology, and innovation policy during 2009 and co-led the FCC transition team between the Bush and Obama administrations. Susan Crawford is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, where she leads the institute's work on making high-speed internet access a universal, affordable resource for all, and is a member of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's Advisory Council on Technology and Innovation. Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard's Law School and a visiting Stanton Professor of the First Amendment at Harvard's Kennedy School. And her latest book just out is Captive Audience, The Telecom Industry and Monopoly Power in the New Gilded Age. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time.